Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
This podcast is sponsored by Greening Law, a personal injury law firm in Dallas, Texas. Greening Law fights the legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast that, unlike the team we love and cover, will be successful running a three-person system this evening. Taylor, Mark, good to speak to you today. How are you?
Doing great.
Doing great.
Awesome. Just as synced up as the first take. So just love it. We'll barrel right in. So as hinted in the intro, we're going to talk a little bit about Dallas's extra time woes and see how much those matter. We're going to start talking trades because why not? We're insane and we're approaching the end of the season. We're going to talk a little bit as well about how things have gone. You know, we're hitting the All-Star break. So we're going to talk about where the team is right now, where they might be coming out of it. Talk a little bit about the All-Stars, who is going, who should go, and just generally celebrate all things, for the most part, celebrate. I mean, we are the Stargazing podcast, so I'm sure we'll vent and bitch about a little bit. But it's going to be a good show. And I want to lead off with the thing that is vexing me. And of course, Dallas is right on the back of a pair of overtime losses. And I wanted to take a temperature and start with you, Taylor. How much does any of this matter?
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I kind of look at it more as points earned than points lost in a lot of ways. They managed to get points in games where they didn't necessarily look like they should have won them. And I think there is something to be said for losing in a good way, i.e. picking up points. You know, at the same time, like, I don't put a ton of stock into it. 3-on-3 is as much of a skill competition as a shootout is, in my opinion. I mean, it's super fun. Don't get me wrong. Love it. Better than whatever used to happen. But at the same time, like, I don't put a ton of stock into them losing those because last time I checked, they still play 5-on-5 when it comes to playoff overtime. So that's the only thing I care about.
The thing is, this year, Dallas has enough separation from the wild card Mendoza line where if they lose an overtime point here or there, it's not going to be something that with two games left in the season, we're regretting all of these single points instead of getting all two.
Yeah, I think that is one of the things that, you know, if we're making our pros and cons list, right, one of the things to chalk up in the it's not a big deal category is, as you mentioned, right, this isn't a season where Dallas is scraping by to get into the playoffs. So losing a point here, a point there won't, it's not likely going to manifest in Dallas not making the playoffs. Counterpoint, though, it could be the difference between a first round matchup with Calgary and a first round matchup with the Colorado Avalanche. So it's, in my opinion, it's also a little bit, you don't necessarily just want to hand wave it and say, oh, they it doesn't matter, right? Because it might, but it also might not, you know? So
points are good. I mean, this is, you play the entire season, regular season, to accumulate points. And so if you get less than the number of points that you could potentially get, and here you have 5 minutes to go out there and do something special in order to get an extra point, well, why not do it?
Why not? Indeed. So, Taylor, why can't they do it?
I don't know.
just to recap, the two major pieces of analysis we've given so far are points are good and we don't know.
I mean, I don't know. It kind of feels
sponsors
like
really looking at their money is well spent right about now.
Green Law, we love you. No, like I don't know what the answer is. I think if the team knew the answer, then they would have fixed it by now. But it kind of reminds me of early in the season when they were taking a ton of penalties and then they put concerted effort towards knocking that off. And then they got better. And so there's nothing saying that they can't. I just think that practice time is really limited. And definitely has been with the schedule that Dallas has had so far this season. Very road heavy, not a lot of time in between games to get some practices and some reps in. And I do think it's a skill like that in the sense that practice and reps are good. And so with the limited time they have had to practice, they focused on their 5-on-5 and their special teams play, because in an ideal world, you get to the end of the game and that overtime shouldn't even happen.
That's also the stuff that matters longer term, right? That's the having good 5-on-5 play is the most important thing that you can do, followed by special teams. So there is a lot of rational, there's a reason. It does make sense that it's not necessarily top of the chart. And I'm glad you touched on the training, because we don't want to forget that this has been it's certainly not the year Texas froze, but this has been a pretty brutal stretch of play with, like you said, limited practice time, basically an entire month and a little bit on the road without much of a stop. So this hasn't been a team that's really been able to sit down and work on things. So it does make sense that a sort of niche problem might come up and not get solved, because this may be one of those, like, Pete DeBoer is kind of shrugging and he just can't even right now.
I think if you go into the detail, I think the problem hasn't necessarily been offensive. What I've noticed, at least more recently, is that defensively, 3-on-3, we're just having a tough time sorting out who's covering who. And you throw in a couple bad changes and a lack of possession for some of these, and all of a sudden, you're giving up shots that are in dangerous areas, and those go in, and other teams are getting a lot more of those than the Stars are.
But again, that's practice time. You have to practice 3-on-3 to get those assignments correctly. And a lot of times it just kind of feels like, let's throw three guys over and see what happens. And I'm not saying that that's the wrong way to go about it. I don't know. I'm not a hockey coach. But I just think that if you're making a priority list and you're saying, what is going to set us up for long-term success, for playoff success, practicing 3-on-3 overtime and shootouts have to be at the bottom.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about practice.
If you're going to do that, then let's take Fox and Kiviranta and Lindell and throw them over the boards and play 5 minutes and get into the shootout.
I mean, that's not where I would want to throw Foxa, and really Kiviranta at the moment as well. But
I agree. But if you're just saying that you can't sort things out on the defensive end, let's throw guys out there who know how to sort things out on the defensive end, play 5 minutes, don't give up anything, and then go to the shootout where we have Pavelski and we got Sagan and we got a bunch of Robertson, all these great guys who are in the shootout. Let's win it there.
Okay, so let me ask. Hang on. Thank you. I was going to say, would you say the same thing if Rick Bowness was the one behind the bench? Because I think we saw that theory in practice last year, and a lot of fans were very upset at that strategy.
And we won a lot of 3-on-3 games last year,
which got the Dallas Stars where exactly in the playoffs?
Out in game 7 in the first round.
Okay, then.
Yeah, and they didn't go into 3-on-3.
Exactly. So, I don't know. I think it's just, to me, there's a lot of other things that I guess you could talk about with this team, but they've been pretty much kind of rolling along. There hasn't been a ton of things to really complain about. So this feels kind of nitpicky in the grand scheme, in my opinion.
Well, we like picking nits here. Stargazing.
Taylor and I are agreeing that we don't like your question. Let's move on to something else.
I don't like your tone. Let's move on to something equally positive. Raise your hand if you know when Mason Marchment last scored a goal.
Not this year.
I was making the joke in the pre-call. The primary assist on his last goal actually went to Brad Richards.
Oh, no, it was Mike Modano,
In the pre-call.
Said.
I wanted to go to an even more dated reference.
Was it against the Florida Panthers he last scored?
It was against the New Jersey Devils on December 3rd.
It was empty net. It was empty net, too. Yep. When was the last time he scored with a goaltender in net?
Minnesota, probably. Hey, they lost in a shootout that night.
Who would have thunk it?
You can't escape it. We started there. We're going
to back to shootouts.
I hate it here.
Yeah, he has. He's got two goals since December. Yeah, he's got two goals since December 4th.
You know, when I think about Marchment, I think about Joe Pavelski's first year in Dallas and how he kind of struggled to acclimate, to figure out his way. I think Marchment has a little bit of that. But the other thing that, to me, is different about streakiness in his scoring is it's not that you have many nights where you don't notice Marchment on the ice, though. Like, he is doing a lot of really good things that maybe don't show up on a box score, but helps with offense in the sense of he's setting the tone on forechecking. He's getting physical. He's sometimes taking really dumb penalties, but he's gotten better at that. So kudos to him. But, you know, like, he's doing a lot of things that helps wear down the opposition over the course of a game. And to me, like, and he is still picking up assists along the way. So it's not that he's been completely scoreless. Do you want me to
bum you out? Because he's not really picking up assists either. He's had in that same stretch. So since December 1st, he's had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 assists since December 4th.
God, I was really close. It's like I watch this team all the time.
I know, right? You know what you're talking about. It's no debating that.
Well, I think what Taylor's done, though, here is at least given me some hope, because I fully agree. I think that's a good analogy with the time that it took Pavelski to get to find his spot with this team. And you're right. Marchment shows up in the game. And I think one of the things that maybe he doesn't get enough credit for is what he's lifted off of the back of Jamie Benn. And he's allowed Benn to kind of not have to be that physical guy and that guy who's going to lead everybody into the fray. And he can play more of his 13, 14 minutes a game with some skill. And Marchment can be the guy who's going to war.
Yeah, and that's I'm glad you're touching on that, right? There is a value. He brings that physicality. He is a north-south skater. This team, you know, it wins board battles. Like, he does a lot of those things. I will say the concerning thing about Marchment, and kind of going back to his profiles, he was kind of your classic late bloom. Like, he really hadn't arrived as an NHL player until he had that big breakout, you know, 47 points, 18 goals in 54 games last year with the Panthers, which really is the sum total of his offensive production at the NHL level. And so the only caution I think that I feel sometimes, even as I'm, because you're right, he pops off the screen, right? But the fear that I have, even as I watch him do lots of little intangible things up and down the ice, is he's one of those guys that until he kind of establishes consistency, he's going to have to answer questions about was last season the outlier, right? You know, was it, or is he the guy that had 10 points in 33 games in 2020-2021, or was he the guy that had, you know, almost a point a game last year, right? And I think that he does have some historical baggage that makes this extended stretch of, you know, lack of production, even though he's doing positive, right? It adds a level of worry that, you know, you mentioned Joe Pavelski, and he was carrying the age thing, right? And so there were certainly some things that gave us pause as fans, and oh no, did we pick up a depreciating asset? But the flip side was Pavelski had an immense body of work that suggested he might figure it out. With Marchment, there really isn't that same, you can't lean on body of work here.
I think you just called Mason Marchment Denny Gurionov.
I mean, they but, might be more similar than we would like to admit.
But what, and maybe this, you know, requires a bit of a deep dive, because I would say, you know, we need to take a look at what made Mason Marchment successful last year with the Florida Panthers. Because there was something special going on. I mean, he was pretty close to a point a game guy. His plus minus, which of course we all hate, was really, really good. Obviously something good was going on, and what was that? What was it about his line mates? What was it about the team? What positions did he get in that we can utilize and put him in those similar type situations with the Stars?
We'll go yell at David and he'll do it. I mean, I think part of it was
Florida. Exactly.
Florida was a fire wagon last year, for starters. He was playing in a team that was very go-go-go, very offensive, very, that entire group just shot the lights out. That they had Barkov was playing at an MVP level. You know, Huberto had his own immense season. They had a pretty healthy stretch out of Ekblad as well. So part of it was he was in an offense that allowed him to sort of thrive as a complementary piece, whereas – you know, he's not the primary facilitator on the Stars. That's not what I'm saying. But he is higher up the need to score chart on the Dallas Stars than he was on the Florida Panthers.
I just want to bring one thing up in regards to what y'all just said. You should really go back and listen to Pete DeBoer talk about plus minus. It's kind of refreshing to hear a coach say that stat is basically useless.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. He's like, we have better statistics that tell us more. So if we use those, we don't really pay attention to plus or minus, more or less. Man, paraphrasing, obviously.
I just love Pete DeBoer more and more every time I hear anecdotes. There's no quicker way to my heart than not liking plus minus as a stat.
Well, okay. So if Marchment isn't giving consistent secondary line scoring, there's some rumors that are starting to float out in the universe here, that Dallas is kind of going hard potentially, or could be a team that potentially goes hard after Bo Horvat up in Vancouver. And I just want to ask you guys for a forward, well, a center who is on fire this year, does definitely know how to find a goal. Would you give up a Wyatt Johnston or a Logan Stankoven or a Thomas Harley for a month and a half and potential deep playoff run for him?
So for a month and a half potential deep playoff run, categorically, no, absolutely not. However, and then Mark's going to get real mad at me in about a second. So given Dallas's situation, I would take Harley off the table. I would take Wyatt Johnston off the table. Johnston off the table, apologies. If you let me talk to Horvat about an extension before a trade was done, depending on what he was going to demand to stick around, you could talk me into including Stankoven.
Just feels like a contract that Dallas can't fit
it does.
In the future.
And that's why it's part of the, you know, there would have to be, you'd have to throw Radek Vaksa into the deal. Right. Or there would have to be some piece going back the other way that helps make some of the money work, because hey, what if here's a deal. What if it was Stankoven and Ryan Suter for Bo Horvat and, you know, a throw in?
Yeah. I don't see Suter waving a no move clause for that.
Well, you hold somebody hostage or do something, you know, find his favorite dog and move the dog to Vancouver and say, listen, you can go get your dog or you can stay here, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, you're pretty much talking about Gurianov or Faxa, maybe a retained salary or maybe a Hudobin. And then, you know, best case scenario, I think you're probably talking to Damiani or a Tufti or something like that. You just can't do that deal if you're taking one of these core prospects where Jim Neal has pulled a rabbit out of a hat and turned this new core away. You know, we had the Ben Sagan core, now we have the Hintz Haskinen core and the guys that we have coming up here with Stankoven and the rest. I mean, you just can't decimate that for a guy who's going to be pretty expensive when he comes out off of his contract at the end of the year.
Well, and that's why, like, I don't think it's likely. And again, I'm also of the school of thought I'd listen on just about anybody. That doesn't mean I'd want to deal, and that doesn't mean I'd make it easy on you. But I'm just thinking, like, for the amount of contorting that Dallas would have to do to fit, like, a player of the profile of Bo Horvat, right? So he had, you know, he's got 31 goals so far this season. He had 31 last year, 19 the year before, 22, 27, 22, 20. He's been a 20 goal scorer since 2016, 2017. And yes, this year is being fueled. He's shooting like 21, almost 22%. So this year is an outlier. He's over. It's unlikely that a 27-year-old hockey player has suddenly figured out how to beat traditional shooting curves, right? But at the same time, even if he is just a 20 to 30 goal scorer, that would help this team immensely. And again, given the fact that to get him, Dallas would also be unloading something not desirable, it would need to be more than like you're not getting Bo Horvat and some stuff, right? You're not getting Bo Horvat and a life preserver for Riley Damiani. So if you were gonna make a deal, and if it would get you Horvat, and it would clear something off of the roster for more than just the rest of this season, again, a guy like Foxa, you would have my attention, because I think that even, you know, sort of your best case, you know, your take your best case projection for Stankoven. How much better is that than the player Bo Horvat has been on a bad Vancouver team to this point?
For me, I look more of the long term. While yes, a long playoff run would be lovely, and Dallas could probably use the revenues and, you know, the excitement around the team, and not to mention the guys in the room really wanting to go after it. You know, you can't do anything that's going to hamstring yourselves later down the road, and that includes getting rid of talent that will be on cost controlled entry level deals and getting the most out of those guys. And I'm not saying that Dallas's window isn't now. I mean, the West feels pretty winnable this year for anybody who goes in. But at the same time, like personally, I'd rather see 3, 4, 5 seasons of consistently going multiple rounds, potentially hitting, you know, striking fire and getting hot and going all the way, than sacrificing something like a Stankoven for just like a short-term return. I don't know. I feel weird about it. But the other thing we haven't touched on is the fact that the owners of the Vancouver Canucks and the owner of the Dallas Stars do not like each other. So so I feel like if Jim Neal calls up Jim Rutherford over in Vancouver and says, "Hey, how about Bo?" I think the answer is, "Hey, how about your top prospect and 2 of your first round picks?"
Yeah. Which Dallas doesn't have, by the way. I think Dallas
or
is
whatever it is.
I mean, it has to be 2024, right? They've got in this upcoming draft, they've got a second round pick and a fourth, second round, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. So they don't have the immediate draft capital that a team might want in this situation.
But honestly, I mean, the way Vancouver is being operated, I don't know that they have a plan figured out there in the midst of a 10-year rebuild, it feels like. So, I mean, at the same time, I am not underestimating the power of them to make moves that make no sense.
The other thing
I feel like is everybody keeps throwing in like Foxa as a guy that, you know, as a throwaway contract, or Gurianov as a throwaway contract. But like, the trade value of those guys doesn't feel like it's too high, y'all.
No.
That doesn't get you the top center, potentially one of the best forwards at the trade deadline to bolster your roster. And then if I look at New Jersey and Boston and Carolina and the Maple Leafs, we're assuming they get out of the first round, and the Rangers and Dallas and Vegas and Seattle, and all of a sudden you're sitting here going, there's 8 or 10 teams that could potentially go after him and make themselves better and go on a deep run.
Yeah, no.
What is Dallas really giving me that's any better than what these guys could give me?
I think you're hitting the nail on the head, and Dallas isn't particularly well positioned to do it at all. And we've talked in previous podcasts, the way that the salary cap is set up right now, there's certainly flexibility moving forward, and they're not they're not Minnesota, and they're not kind of poised to lose guys that they would like to keep, but they're also not a team that's in a position to make a big splash, which is, you know, why partial, you know, it's just not really. Yeah, there are going to be better options if you're the Canucks, for sure.
I like where we're at. Well, that's what we're going to hear.
this deal sounds a lot like it's 10 o'clock in the evening and somebody says, "Let's do shots," and you it sounds really good right now, but you're going to regret it later.
I don't know.
Like I said, Mark. It just comes down to if you know, having watched Jim Neal pull some bamboozling contracts out of his magical mustache in the past. there's just, like I said, I wouldn't do it. And if I'm Vancouver, I think I would insist on Wyatt Johnston being a part of it, which would be an absolute deal breaker for me at this stage. And same thing with Thomas Harley. This team is desperate for defense, and they have Harley in the organization. What does it look like without him? But at the same time, like I said, if you could get a good contract, if you could find a way to offload the assets that you needed to make that good contract work, and if Stankoven as the centerpiece was the price of doing business, you'd at least have my attention. With that said, I think that the number of mistakes that Vancouver would have to make to get into that situation, I cannot fathom things breaking in a way that would allow that to happen, but that's kind of where I am.
A message from the attorneys at Greening Law PC, a personal injury law firm in Dallas, Texas. If you have been hurt in a car accident, experienced malpractice from a physician, hospital, or were injured on the premises of a business, then call the lawyers at Greening Law. They have represented clients from car accidents to birth injuries to sexual assault cases involving clergy or hospitals. The staff at Greening Law, better known as the Green Team, fights your legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal. You know, we talk a lot on this podcast about our fierce Dallas Stars. The Green Team is your fierce legal competitor against insurance companies. So what are you waiting for? Consultations are free. They only get paid if you get compensated. So give them a call at 972-934-8900. Again, that number is 972-934-8900. Call now. Principal office is located in Dallas, Texas.
You know, Mark did bring up an interesting piece, though. Riley Damiani, last Saturday, the guys on Sportsnet reported that Damiani is a guy that they could see potentially needing a change of scenery type trade for. He's not scoring at the pace he has been over the last few seasons. He's got 6 goals through 32 games. He had 13 and 55 last year.
So I mean, he's been kind of in the doghouse lately. So, I mean, this is a piece that, you know, he was rookie of the year. He certainly has some skills. There are some questions maybe about how much of his rookie of the year season was tied to Adam Mascherin and that duo. But he certainly is a good name, and he has potential, but he's kind of worked his way down the depth chart in Texas, and a change of scenery might do him real good.
It's telling that Dallas in their, you know, they sort of have this internal search for secondary and tertiary scoring options going on, and Damiani hasn't had a sniff.
Every guy that they've called up has been like a defensive specialist or, you know, bottom six kind of guy. And I'm sitting there going, but why? Like, why not try something fun against like the Arizona Coyotes? Not to disparage them, but like,
oh no, disparage them. It's fine.
That you're supposed to win. Maybe you go out and try something different. Maybe you find instant chemistry, lightning in a bottle.
Well, I mean, they did bring up Blumel to start, and I think that was probably the most skilled call up that they've had. But yeah, you're right. Otherwise, it's been guys who just are solid and solid bottom six.
Meanwhile, Peterson is just on Mars, apparently.
Well, I mean, Peterson's been fine. I mean, the thing about Texas is that they have 12 forwards who are just all contributing. You know, at this point, I would say the next guy gets called up is probably Student Nietzsche, because he's on a heater and we know what he can do at the NHL level, and I think he's improved on that.
Except that he would have to pass through waivers to get back down to Texas. So
that's the problem.
I don't see that one happening personally, because you don't want to lose him. And yep.
I agree with you. This isn't me arguing with you, Taylor. This is me arguing with the universe. It's just crazy that you can't call him up because you don't want to lose him. So you can't use him because you don't want to lose him. So you don't have him. You know what I mean? It's one of those like, then what is the point? What are we?
Well, you didn't let me finish my thought. So
welcome to stargazing.
Stop talking over the women in the room. No, I'm just kidding.
I talk over everybody. I resent that.
I know. No, what I was going to say is, you know, the fact that Texas is doing so well this season, sitting atop the Central Division last time I checked, you know, Neil Graham going to his first AHL All-Star game as a coach, you know, and like Mark said, a bunch of guys contributing. They're kind of getting buy-in. They're having success with the system, yada, yada. There is something to be said about having a guy like Student Nietzsche on your team and going on a deep Calder Cup run. Yep. Like, do not disparage the fact that these guys get very valuable experience doing that. And so, yeah, it kind of sucks. Would you like to see him up here and see if he sparks with somebody? Sure. But at the same time, if you don't think he's ready to be in the NHL full time, you let him stew down there and you let him get all of that experience and all of that playoff, all those playoff games, and then you bring him into camp and then you see what he can do. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I mean, are we still talking about Stu Nich?
Yes.
Because he's 24. Is my only concern there is like,
oh my god, he's so old.
For in sports terms, he is definitely not young. And I say that as somebody that is horrified at his own age. So
yeah, but I mean, Olofsson's actually what, 26? So it's there's some weird ages down with that group in Texas.
Agreed.
You know,
but 24 isn't like, oh my gosh, write him off as a prospect age.
But it is an age where it is unlikely that there is an additional level that he will find playing in the AHL.
If we're going to have that conversation, then why are we not talking about Denny Gurionov then?
I mean, because listen, I've been as big a booster of Gurionov as anybody else. And even I will say that right now he's getting opportunities based on the lack of alternatives more than on any legitimate expectation that there's a switch that's going to get flipped.
I mean, all good and fine, but if you throw that on the table, then all of a sudden Gurionov at what, $2.9 million, is going to clear waivers. And so at that point, bring up your next best guy who's going to contribute and can contribute on a third line. And there are several of them.
Except that really handcuffs you from a cap perspective, because it's not like you're burying his entire cap down in the NHL, in the AHL. And that will limit your ability to call guys up even further. So the minute that one guy has a little bit of soreness or something, becomes a huge problem.
Yeah.
So in that regard, Gurionov does fill a role because he can go in and he can play minutes. And while the coaching staff may not trust him completely, they know how to shelter him or put him with guys that they know can like cover for him. And they've learned to live with his particular brand of mistakes.
And he's sort of like a lottery ticket, unlike a guy without a track record. What if you get the bubble playoff runner? What if you get the 18 goal season? Like with Denis Gurionov, there is, you know, the Arizona game from last week, right? Like there is, you mentioned lightning in a bottle earlier, Taylor. With Denis Gurionov, there is a track record of painful, frustrating, you know, career limiting inconsistency, and nobody will with a brain in there will argue against that. But you also have the chance there, you know, I still remember there is still the water bottle orbiting space that hasn't landed yet, right? There, you still have at least, you know, this is a player that can win an individual game if he happens to be on a heater that night.
Yeah.
And when you're a team without many other options, when you're a team without the flexibility to access other options, that there is an appeal there.
And thus we come full circle to Bo Horvat does not make sense.
He only makes sense if they can get him signed to an extremely team friendly deal in a trade that jettisons cost ineffective assets that Dallas already has. He makes sense if he's willing to sign a dumb contract and it's a bad trade. And if you can get a bad trade and a bad contract, then I'm pro Bo Horvat, even if it costs Stankoven.
Wait, you just said bad contract.
Yeah,
bad for the player.
Yeah. Oh, I was like, what? No, that's not what they need at all.
If you can convince both Bo Horvat and Vancouver to settle for less than they could get elsewhere, then you have my attention.
Well, we have Jim Neal. Jim Neal has a mustache, and Jim Neal twirls that mustache periodically, and sometimes it works out. So if anyone's going to do it, he will. But I'm kind of with Taylor. It's like Vancouver and Dallas don't talk.
No, that's the other piece, right? So I guess to amend my statement, I'm willing to part with Stankoven if you can get a team that hates the Dallas Stars to make a terrible trade and then convince the player to take, from his perspective, a bad contract. And if you can do that, I'm in. Let's do it. Let's roll.
I think what you're forgetting though is that Stankoven is is captaining the Kamloops team, and they're probably going to win the Memorial Cup. And guess who is a part owner of Kamloops? Tom Gilardi.
Okay, fine. If you can get Tom Gilardi to do something, if you get Tom Gilardi to let Jim Nill do something he won't like with a team that he hates, and convince that team to do something stupid, the team being Vancouver, and then convince the player Bo Horvat to also do something stupid. Then I'm in.
So and we're, still gonna regret it because Stankoven is a stud.
That's right, he is. But he is of the pipeline and of the guys with pedigree that you would need to be. And I'm just to get rid of the joke, just to extend this into a general conversation about if Dallas is going after any high-end asset, if you're looking at the quality of player that they would have to get rid of to be in that conversation, right? The Johnstons and the Harleys and the Stankovens, if we're talking about the guy that you would need to bring in that quality of player, then Stankoven is the first name on my list to get rid of. Again, a 27-year-old 30-goal scorer is the kind of the starting point for where I would get. So I'm not trading him for depth, is what I'm saying. You got to pay to play, right? So if you're in the big hitter's end of the trading pool, then Stankoven is probably the guy, unless, you know, maybe somebody's more interested in Maverick Bork's 200-foot game. But he's probably the guy you dangle, because from the standpoint of Dallas Stars elite prospects, he's the one that they could most likely cope with not having.
Yeah, but that contract's going to be $9+ million per year. It's going to be 8 years long, 7 years long.
Yep.
And you're just, if you make that deal, you're marrying that player until he's in his mid-30s and crossing your fingers that he can live up to it.
Yeah, I don't want that smoke. So let's pivot. And, you know, we teased at the start. We've got the All-Star break is coming up, and wanted to get your thoughts. Of course, obviously, Jason Robertson is the big marquee representative of the Dallas Stars. And the first question I want to ask is take out all of the nonsense rules and, you know, the stuff about who has to go, right? Team representation, all of that. Just based on performance, in your opinion, we'll start with you, Taylor. Who on the Stars do you feel like is having an all-star quality season?
Jake Oettinger.
Yep.
I mean, it's a good one, yeah. if you didn't have Connor Hellebuck and UC Saros in this division, I mean, Jake Oettinger is definitely in the conversation. And honestly, I think Saros only got in because Nashville needed somebody.
I was going to say, it's not only UC Saros, but it's Saros playing on a team that doesn't have anybody else that really stands out.
Right. So, and that way, Oettinger gets boned. At the same time, I mean, personally, I see future All-Star games, you know, for him. So yeah. I'm not overly concerned about it. But yeah, Oettinger for me.
How about you, Mark?
Well, isn't there like a golfing competition as part of the All-Star game? And either way, I'm taking Pavelski because he's the story.
Yeah. From a narrative standpoint, I think he's the guy, the cagey veteran, the old man holding his line together. And I also think his contributions, while, you know, without the injury, I would have put Henson before he missed time. I would have put Henson in that conversation. But really, the whole first line should have just gone. Except, crap, they play 3-on-3 in the All-Star game. Should maybe Dallas just stay home?
Well, you know, here's my other thought. I've come back to this. I think 3-on-3, we just start Robertson, Pavelski, and Hintz and be done with it. Yeah. Who needs the defender? You bring in Haskin in after we score.
After we score.
You mean for the handshake line?
No, yeah, exactly. He said what he said.
Yeah. I'm all in on three forwards.
Just let him play until the end. I mean.
Yes. So, wait. Doesn't San Jose get the All-Star game next year? Like, are they saving Pavelski with the, you know, old man, no cup? Potentially, hopefully that storyline is done next year, but maybe they're saving him to bring him back to San Jose. For some reason, I thought it was San Jose.
I mean, I think you could say, I think it's more likely that just Jason Robertson is having, you can't not send him, regardless of, like, he was leading the NHL in goals at one point. He was, you know, he has kind of thrust himself into the, MVP level conversation. And as appealing as the storyline is around Joe Pavelski, and as great as Ottinger has played this season, and both of those things are two thumbs up for me, I just, you can't, it can't not be. And that's kind of why I started with who else would you send, right? But once you get into the tougher question, which is, okay, if you can only send one Dallas star, it's really hard for me to argue against Jason Robertson being the pick. Because you even have the Jamie Benn, the Bennessons, right? Like, there's all sorts of stuff going on with this team right now.
Okay, but that wasn't the question. The question you asked me was who is having an all-star
game. That's true. I did. And that's the question you're answering. I think Pavelski is a very good answer to that question. I think Ottinger as well. Like I was saying before the injury, I would have put hints in that. Here's one. Do you think that Miro Heiskanen is having an all-star quality season?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, numbers wise, I mean, he's brought the offense just like you asked him to, and the defense hasn't really suffered. It's hard to get in on defense though.
Yep, and it's hard to get in a Cale Makar world, yeah, when the offense is that flashy.
I just also think that Haskinen's like two-way game is not as appreciated at an All-Star game. You need guys with flash, which is actually why I'm really pissed off at this whole format, because I want all of the fun guys. I don't necessarily need the best guys. I want to see some personality out there. Like, I want Zegers coming out and scoring something we've never seen before in our lives. I want Cole Caulfield being a short king, you know, although he got injured, so that's unfortunate. Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, but like, I think that the All-Star game as a tool, a marketing tool of your sport,
yep,
should be fun.
Yeah.
And I don't think that this requirement of every team needs representation is providing that, first of all. Not that there aren't good players on bad teams, but I don't think that we need a Vancouver Canuck this year. Have you seen that organization?
I mean, Bill Horvat.
But like, make it. But like, I'm saying, like, I want to see all the young guys, the up and comers, the guys that don't end up on all of the posters, like. Do we need to see Austin Matthews in an All-Star game? Probably not. We see him enough. Give me the William Nylander and give me
bring in Berniers.
Yeah, Berniers.
Berniers, thank you. Yeah. I knew I said that wrong.
I mean,
yeah,
they could bring in Bernier, but he.
I was doing a jersey preview. I think he's. I think he's on IR. Yeah,
and they can play anyways. It's fine.
But, like, I want to see the Hughes brothers. And, you know, like, put the guys that they don't spend time marketing out there and let them have so much fun. Like, I want to see that next generation out there bonding and helping to grow the game by just being fun.
Well, I've always, my dream format has always been put a cash prize and let the players come up with their own teams. Let groups of four, right, goalie and three scare, you know, let groups get themselves together. Hey, maybe the Hughes family wants to, you know, maybe the Hughes family and the Tkachuks want to get together and enter the tournament. I think they should do it that way. Forget this whole by conference, by team thing. Just have guys pair up.
Okay, new idea. Whatever team is at the top of each conference, right, at whatever the cutoff point for All-Star is, then what you do is you take the captain of both of those teams and they get to draft their own team. Only them. They're the only ones that get a say.
Goulyard pick. I love it.
But of course, the NHL will never do any of that because it's a terrible thought backwards. It's a league that doesn't want to market itself aggressively.
But also,
they're too worried. They stopped doing a draft because they were too worried somebody had to be last.
No, they were too worried about their players getting hammered on TV.
I mean, the feature, not
back to shots.
Let's be real. You know, I'm just saying, like, I think that there's so much that they could do with it. And at the end of the day, I feel pretty good in saying this, having been around the locker room enough. Like, I don't think that NHL players care as much as the fans or the league do. But, like, maybe you could provide some incentives for, like, young guys to want to go and not take that time to, you know, hit up the Bahamas or Cancun or whatever. But I do think that the guys really enjoy that break, especially the older guys.
And the nice thing is that an All-Star appearance is a Schedule A bonus. So let's pay those young guys.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And also, it's one of those classic situations where, like, from an entertainment perspective, I mean, I would argue still that the three-on-three format's better than the traditional, you know, the All-Star game I grew up with in, like, the late 90s and early aughts. So it's but it's not like this is a treasured, long-cherished tradition that everybody just loves and fawns over, and why mess with success? Like, this is a thing that could really stand to be revitalized anyway. So I agree with you, Taylor. They should get, I mean, I'm not going to watch it because I don't care about football, but I at least, you know, the NFL going like flag football plus skills competition, why not, right? The thing you were doing doesn't matter anyway. Try something new.
Hey, three.
Make
three
it like I was just going to say, make it like a competition where, like, if you win the skills competition, you get a point. And yeah, the game, like, counts, but get the teams to be super into, because, like, they name the All-Star winners just based on the game itself. And I'm sitting there going, well, then why have all the skills competitions? Make that competitive, an actual competition. You get to win points for your division, and team with most points at the end of the weekend wins.
You lost me. I am a hardcore unrepentant. The All-Star game should never count for anything other than the amusements of the All-Star game. MLB proved how ridiculous that was.
Well, that's true.
When Michael Young and the last place Texas Rangers determined World Series home field advantage, I think it was 2 years in a row. I'm out.
It should be on an island. I think it's funny.
It should be fun, and it should be wacky, and it should be zany, and it should not count.
I learned what they did in Vegas. They started to get a little bit more of that when they went to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
So more of that. And less of the traditional, you know, well, we're doing this because we've always done it this way.
Let the players get hammered.
Here's my thought. You go 3-on-3, but no player can stand the ice more than 30 seconds.
I want to see hockey players playing flip cup.
I like it.
I mean, just let them bro out.
I am ready for the All-Star break, y'all. I'm so tired.
Well, we have one game to go. They finish up tomorrow with their festivities, and do you think just maybe they will get out of regular, will they have to play bonus hockey, or are they gonna at least finish up with the Devils in regulation? What's our prediction?
Go ahead, Mark.
I think they beat the Devils just because the Devils have been on this road heater, and that needs to end. So yeah, let's end it now. Be done with it. I'm going to sit back and watch two young all-stars, Jack Hughes, exactly. Jason Robertson. And I'm not going to watch anybody else. If those guys are on the ice, I'm just going to, you know, go to the kitchen and make a sandwich.
Fair enough. Then I'm going to end the podcast with one perplexing question. See if you guys can get it. And you probably will, because why else would I be asking? But who has a better record in the last 10 games, the Dallas Stars or the Chicago Blackhawks?
This feels like a trap. Dallas, right?
Dallas is 5-2-3. Chicago is 6-4.
Oh, Chicago is like 6-4-0. Oh, yeah. That's right.
Oh, but the bonus question, how many pucks or sticks to the face has Jason Dickinson taken?
Ugh, all of them probably. He has a face.
He does have a face, yeah.
Yes, he does.
Well, it's been a pleasure. We'll keep an eye on the Devils tomorrow. Hopefully Dallas gets, you know, it's not a slump because they're getting into overtime points count. Who cares? But it would be nice to end this little stretch of the season with a successful send-off. And then comes the All-Star break, and then comes the frantic stretch down the end of the season. Thank you both, Mark and Taylor, for your time. KT, thanks for stitching this all together. Don't forget to like, don't forget to download, don't forget to reach out on all of the socials if there's anything you need or want to ask. We're always looking for questions and feedback and fun. Otherwise, enjoy your Stars hockey. This podcast is sponsored by Greening Law, a personal injury law firm in Dallas, Texas. Greening Law fights the legal battle so you have time for healing and renewal.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.